Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Aubrey Marcione. She'll be giving us the latest happenings with the American Dance Wheels Foundation. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with the American Dance Wheels Foundation.
Well, this year, the American Dance Wheels Foundation has expanded our programs, our wheelchair dance programs, by the use of technology through Skype. We've been teaching programs in schools, rehab centers, and also individuals in their homes through using Skype. And the reason we decided to do this is because up until now, we only have so many teachers in so many states, and it's an expensive process to become certified. So we tried to figure out a way to make it more affordable for people to become certified, and to try to be geographically available really to everyone. And the only way we thought we could do that is through the internet. So this year, actually, we were able to certify more teachers than ever before in a year, and we've reached a lot of different facilities throughout the United States.
So how has the community responded to this concept?
They've actually responded really well. I was really worried about how the community would respond to learning, you know, dance through the internet, and everyone that we've taught, they've really enjoyed the process. I've enjoyed the process teaching that way as well. And it's really not very different from teaching someone in person. I mean, the physical contact, isn't there, but you can still, as a teacher, I can still instruct, the same way, and they can still learn very well from watching, through Skype.
So, were there any challenges in setting this up?
The only challenge, I think, setting it up, we did a lot of research with what equipment to use, the HD cameras and, the computers, the internet connections, to make sure that the picture that our customers are getting it was really clear. They could really see us and understand what we were doing. So there was a little bit of, research that went into it. But it really wasn't, the technology is out there. So it really wasn't that difficult to begin. It was just a lot of research. And with some of our programs, we do have, for example, we just did a program at Shriners Hospital in Chicago. So we do train the therapist in the program before we actually start the course. So we do have people there that can give the dancers a hands-on experience if they really need it. So it's not really all online. There are facilitators that are trained beforehand. But wasn't really any drawbacks or things that were difficult for us in setting it up.
So, since the work began with the Skype program, what's been the greatest success that you've seen?
I think the greatest success is just being able to eliminate, you know, the barriers of the geography and the transportation and the cost of the program to people. I think we were very successful in training more teachers this year so that physical programs could start. We trained 28 teachers this year from, you know, Florida, Texas, California, Canada, all over the place. So that's a huge success because it means our program is expanding. Another success that we had is we received a lot of grants to provide programs online through Skype this year. And we weren't really sure how receptive people were going to be, you know, funders were going to be to the idea of people learning how to dance, you know, using Skype. But they were very responsive and supportive, and we were able to start a lot of different programs for children, which is something that everyone in our organization is very passionate about. And our children's programs seem to be the most successful programs. The kids really enjoy it, and there's many benefits to them.
So for those who might not be as familiar with the work of the foundation, give me an overview of how this new program ties into the work you were already doing.
Okay. Well, we our organization is an organization that teaches wheelchair ballroom and Latin dancing to people who use wheelchairs, adults and children of all different ages and ability levels. People can learn how to dance with a manual chair, a power chair, and it's partner dancing, so there's one seated dancer and one standing dancer. With Skype, it really is just another way to reach more people with our program. So we're not really doing anything different. We're just able to give the program to people in all over the country now. So we've kind of broken through that barrier, that difficulty, and now we're just trying to get more funding so that we can give away more programs to the people that really want it. The Skype program was actually inspired, it actually stemmed from our Widener Memorial program with Temple University. We actually have a program in the Philadelphia School District, Widener Memorial School, partners with Temple University, and the kids at the school, they partner with the Temple students, the recreational therapy students, and we received a lot of recognition for this program. It's been in existence for about 10 years, and schools all over the country, you know, started to recognize it, and they wanted to know how they could get this program. And a lot of the areas that were asking, we didn't have a teacher in the area. So that's really why we tried to figure out a way to reach, you know, these schools. And the Skype program is what we came up with. So it's really not a different program. It's just different in that they're watching us on a TV instead of having us there in person.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
For more information about getting a program started, visit www.AmericanDanceWheelsFoundation.org. This whole idea, folks, strikes me as exactly the right approach. If you have a message as to something in disability life you want to get out there, find a way, reach as many people as you can, and expand. Don't let a good idea stay underdeveloped. If you want to reach people with any sort of program or information that can help them, reach out. Social media, the internet, they're wonderful tools to do this. The fact of the matter is, it's fine for one person to have a solution or something innovative in disability life, but it's not as effective, not nearly as effective, if it's just staying in-house, they don't send the message. They don't take the steps and say, gee, this worked well for us. Someone out there could be able to profit from it. This technique of using Skype for dance teaching and just getting people active and involved really is a great idea, in my opinion, folks. Because the fact is, there's no reason that a tool like that can't be used just to send a message. It's a very visual, very concrete way of teaching these maneuvers. And if it can be learned in this way, people don't have to do all the travel, which, depending upon the type of disability, could be kind of a problem for them. It's a revolutionary approach, I think. But it really shows there's hope. Make use of all this technology for the benefit of all those who need it, no matter what the condition. Fact is, people all over the world are affected by disability issues, and they also have ideas and insights that are worth sharing. Now, if you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Aubrey was also right that technologies like Skype training should be incorporated as a part of the existing programs. Shouldn't become the end-all, be-all. There is a need for human connection, need for human contact in the world. In society today, it's so easy to look at some of the technologies and just say, oh, my phone will do my thinking for me, or I don't really need to sit down and talk to this person. It's a balance, my friends, between the technological communications and actually putting things into practice with that human element. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Have you ever thought about volunteering with CJAM FM? Why haven't you? Volunteering isn't limited to students. Anyone from the community can come into the station and start their very own program. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So get involved right here in your community with a topical spoken word show or music program where you choose the content. Email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located on the University of Windsor campus in the basement of the CAW Student Center. Find out more information about how you can volunteer at cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Aubrey Marcione, who's telling us about a new advancement at the American Dance Wheels Foundation. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Patricia Chadwick, who will be telling us about the Disability Social History Project. So tell me a little bit about the Disability Social History Project.
The project was started by my late husband and me. My husband, Stephen Diaz, had was a librarian and archivist, and he also had a disability, spinal cord injury, and was active in the disability rights movement in, you know, the 1970s, he participated in the 508 occupation of the federal building in San Francisco, and he started, I think at that point, started collecting kind of ephemera books about the disability rights movement as well as other social movements, but he collected things like flyers and pamphlets and books, other objects related to disability, both in, you know, the civil rights movement as well as just older history. And in 1995, we decided to Well, we actually had been working with some other people on trying to look at maybe setting up an archive, like a physical archive. But that kind of was a pretty major thing to try and do. So in lieu of that, we just started posting stuff on our website, the Disability Social History Project, which is disabilityhistory.org is the URL.
So
we took, the stuff that he had collected and took pictures of it, some of the stuff, and posted it online. And just wanted to, start sharing the history of disability so that people with disabilities could see that they had a shared history and that a shared culture, like other kind of marginalized groups, and that it was an important part of history and how people with disabilities had been treated and, what the improvements were and what still needed to be done.
So have there been any challenges in gathering and organizing the information regarding the shared history?
There are other people doing this and other websites. I think there's something called Disability Museum. And, there's other websites that do disability history. Sometimes they're in different areas, like there's a website on the history of, polio and deaf history. So there's a lot, honestly, I haven't done a lot on the website. My husband passed away about 4 years ago, but I try to link to other stuff that's on the web, so that the resources are there. And now I have a different full-time job, but I also write a blog about media and disability, like how people with disabilities are portrayed in the media, how they can use media to advance the civil rights movement, and mostly I write about people with disabilities in other countries. But, it is a challenge to collect the history because it's, I think, for a long time was never seen as an important part of history. For example, there's a state institution in California, Sonoma State Development Center, that's going to be closing soon, and I had visited there many years ago. There was a library that had a lot of information, and I don't know if they think how important they think that is to preserve. I think they're preserving some kind of the photos and things like that, but there's documents and reports that doctors wrote, kind of eugenic stuff, that I don't know how much of that they're preserving. So it's just that it never, wasn't seen sometimes as an important thing to save or collect, and so sometimes it's difficult to get that information.
So you mentioned the push forward in disability rights. Has there been any success moment in your experience toward that end?
Definitely the ADA was an important step, and I'm not probably the best one to speak on things like policy issues, but I would say in the United States, the ADA was very important, and other educational. I don't have all of the acronyms because it's not, one of the things I focus on, but I know things like IDEA and including students with disabilities in mainstream schools, and the laws that exist around that have been pretty important for helping people here with disabilities advance their civil rights movement. I think part of it is also being able, there's a kind of a equipment aspect to it. I know there's another word for but like when power chairs became more popular and people could get out on their own, that kind of helped promote, you know, civil rights, because people were out there and able to get out into the community and show people that they were, you know, contributing members of society and, you know, advocate for themselves. So there is like a, and I know that with, like my daughter's blind and the equipment that she's able to use to access, you know, computers and the internet is really important for being able to be included in society. So there's also that aspect of the civil rights movement as well.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from our friend Kira Royal. We'll be talking about how mental health can affect things like income and access in society, thus relating to the larger issues surrounding poverty and disability. So how is it, in your opinion, mental health can impact position within society and things such as income?
Yeah, well, if it's untreated, there's a difficulty functioning, a difficulty with kind of getting yourself out of bed and getting yourself to your place of work. So that can obviously impact your job, which would then put you at risk of being fired, unfortunately. So that can definitely affect it. And if, let's say, you've gone treatment for it, but you're still working, there's some difficulty of, well, what if you need to take a sick day for mental health? I think a lot of people are ashamed to, if their employer asks why they were sick, ashamed to say, oh, I had to take a mental health day, because they're afraid their boss would reflect poorly on them because of that.
So, in some cases, with the stigma surrounding mental health issues, there can be a lack of access to services, which mm-hmm. would just lead to an exacerbation of the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure. Service waiting lists are often long, often anywhere I've heard from 4 months to up to 2 years. That definitely doesn't make it easy for people that kind of want to nip it in the butt, or they just want to learn better coping strategies and treatment, and it's really unfortunate.
So when it comes to the lack of access to services, some people living in poverty with mental health issues would actually need these services to kind of break the cycle, get out of poverty, get sustainable work, and actually we're sort of creating the problem and the solution. Any thoughts on this?
It's definitely difficult, especially when you're in a place of poverty. You would obviously not have access to the private sector either, which often does not have wait lists. That makes it even harder. So you're waiting for a service from the public that's free, and that can take a long time. So you're kind of stuck in this vicious cycle of you want to get better, you want to get back to work, so you want to get everything figured out, but you can't because you're on this long waiting list. And I think a lot of our governmental services don't recognize this. So it's difficult.
So basically it comes down to sort of keeping the poor in poverty and those with mental health in the same position.
Yeah. Yeah, and looking at how, like, our welfare system works, they often, I think the requirement is now that you have to be actively searching for a job while on welfare. But this can be very difficult for people with mental health issues, as you really don't have the motivation sometimes. You don't want to get out of bed. You don't have the motivation to do that. And there's also this stigma that, well, they can just, you know, pull themselves up and then get the job. But it's a lot easier said than done. They don't have the resources, so they can't get that job. it's a vicious cycle.
So if you could send any one message to our leadership about the need for improved services for people affected with mental health issues and poverty and other types of disabilities, what might you say?
Yeah, I would really say to ensure there is funding available. The problem is why these services have such long wait lists is there's not funding available to hire more people. And then you get social workers stuck with a huge caseload and they max out, they can't have any more clients. So I would say to our leadership to really make sure that these critical services like mental health care, poverty support, so social housing, stuff like that has enough funding to move forward so that social security net is there.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep, no problem.
Every year I like to look at the issues surrounding poverty and disability. I'm going to be preparing an episode on this for Joe Strummer Day, which, here at the station, is one of our most important events. Fact is, we can't just say we're uncomfortable looking upon those affected with these issues and just shuffle them off. Fact is, anyone, whether they have mental health issues or living in poverty or any type of disability, they deserve the chance to rise above all that. They deserve the chance to contribute to society. Fact is, as long as there's life, there's potential for a person to create, to hope, to dream, to build a better world. And with the issues surrounding homelessness and poverty and disability, it's not a question of our right as a people to say, we're in control and you're not. It's a matter of building each other up, making a better world. Saying, I recognize you have skills, capabilities, that you are an intelligent, enriching person. You have the ability to do the unknown, maybe even what we consider today to be impossible. But it is not a matter of the rich getting richer or people having to wait ridiculous amounts of time, as Kira said. Yeah, to a lot of these people, it's a paycheck. It's a statistic on paper. That's very true. But if you look at it from the other angle, it's a matter of men and women, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, people living in our society who need the support, who need the help today, people we have neither the right nor the obligation to turn our backs on. And I love this time of year because I see so many people coming together to do good, to just improve circumstances. And I maintain Kira made things better simply by addressing these issues, simply by talking about them. Get a dialogue going. See what can be done. Pool your resources. Truth of the matter is, problems generally do get solved better when you have more than one mind working on it. People taking ideas, seeing what fits and what doesn't. But when it comes to matters of people with disabilities, including with the issues surrounding poverty, it should be nothing about us without us. People with disabilities can speak to what really needs to be done. Our leaders are not responsible for simply assuming that we need this, this, and this. They have to make a plan, make sure they know what the real needs are and how to implement the changes. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.